Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Open Government Radio. This is the show for April 20th, 2010. And for those of you who are listening live, or even if you're not, you can follow along with the conversation by going to ustransparency.com. And that's, I'm Steve Buckley, I'm your host, and that's my blog for today's show, at least if you go to the posting for April 19th. Of course, I posted that yesterday, and for today's show, and that will help us tell you, of course, who our guest is for today and what the topic is. And we will also be discussing the links there. And a different approach this time is to get some questions ahead of time from people who are listening, or sometimes people who have another meeting they have to attend and still want to raise an issue. So this way, by putting down your comments at the end of the blog post for today, scroll down and you'll see there's a place there to put your comments. And people, I did put out the word that we'd be what we'd be talking about today, and so you can see there's a healthy number of comments. Right now I'm looking at 13 comments, so some of these people are listening and some are not. So what we'll do is start a little bit. As you can see that Beth Novick is with us. She's the director of the White House's Open Government Initiative, which kicked off the very first day of President Obama's presidency, when he signed a memorandum on transparency and open government. And as you can see, so if you are following along at ustransparency.com, you can see the introduction there that I took off of for Beth Novick, that I took off of Wikipedia. And of course, that's not always correct, so she can correct anything there that herself, as far as her background and what she's been doing since coming to the White House and working on the Open Government Initiative. And then we'll go down through a few, after we discuss a little bit, I do want to get to the questions, and then Beth has indicated that she has a 3 o'clock meeting, so we won't be using the whole hour, and we'll try to cover as much as possible and go to the phones. If you have provided a comment and we've talked about it, then I'm going to go to the phones and see if we can pull up and recognize some of the people who have who can kind of join the discussion at that point. So this is all kind of an experiment. We'll see how it works. I'm, you know, just like the Open Government Initiative, there's a lot of experimentation. So anybody who wants to provide some feedback on how this can work better, I'm all ears. But we'll talk about that after the show. Anyway, so I did want to make sure that people knew, before I forget about it, that next week will be the fourth installment of the Open Government Directive Workshop Series, which will be on April 28th at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And I'm one of the co-organizers, but Lucas Chiaffi is the primary organizer there, and I congratulate him for being the GovLoop Member of the Week this week. If you go to GovLoop, you'll probably see something on the main page there about Lucas's background and his efforts with the Open Government Directive Workshop Series and other things. So I congratulate him on that. And with that, I guess I'll turn to Beth. Are you there, Beth?
I am here, yes. I'm delighted to be here.
Okay, great. Like I said, this is Open Government Radio is something of an experiment, and like I said, I'm trying a slightly different format, so we'll see how it works. And like I told people I see there's a number of callers listening now. They can, like I said, they can lurk or whatever, but I may call on them later on after we go through some of these things here, as we're all following along on the same webpage. So is that a Wikipedia entry? Is it correct? Is it missing anything there that gives people a sense for those people who are listening who maybe aren't as involved with the open government effort as you and I and others are? Anything that you'd like to enhance or correct in that description of your background? Are you there, Beth? Okay, let me check here. Okay, wait a minute, hold it. Try that again. Something happened. Try that again. Beth, are you there? Okay. Something does not seem to be working here. Okay, I'm going to check here. Okay, this is a phone check. Is someone there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes, this is Steve Buckley. I'm having some difficulty, I think, with the phone. I'm not sure.
I'm dialing you again now on another line, so I apologize.
Okay. Yeah, I see.
Can you hear me better now?
Fine. Well, let's see. I have a 703. That's a landline, I guess.
Yeah. It's just a radio check for you.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I'm trying to get Beth Novak back on the line, but you're obviously not her. I'm gonna put you on mute. Let's see. Let's try this. Okay, I forget which one she was calling in from. Is that Beth Novak?
I'm here, hello.
Okay, fine.
Alrighty.
Sorry
about the technical difficulty, everybody.
Okay, no, I was afraid it was my phone line and that I had lost everybody.
So no, entirely my fault. One of the great challenges of creating a more open and innovative government is sometimes the technology.
Yep, okay, fine. Well,
so as to your question about Wikipedia, I have not, since I can admit that I did not actually author my own Wikipedia page, and I haven't even checked it lately to see whether I've been suitably slandered or not, but I'm very happy to report is that I'm a law professor by background, and my specialty has been for a long time in the impact of technology on political and legal institutions and looking at how to use new technology to create more openness and collaboration. So it was sort of a natural segue from that work, which has always been both theoretical and applied and hands-on, developing systems for greater collaboration and innovation in legal and political institutions into doing this work for the White House Open Government Initiative.
Right, okay. And that seems to capture what I had this excerpt, like I said, on today's posting at ustransparency.com. I did put an excerpt there. So, and there's also a link under that to your book, Wiki Government. So if people aren't aware of your book, they can link right there and at some point after the show find out more about that. Like I said, we'll go to the questions in a little while, and it's good to hear from people outside our own circles to find out what questions people who are trying to implement the Open Government Plan is. But I'll take a few minutes if you want to explain, for those of us who have been keeping up with the Open Government Initiative, time flies. April 7th was the day that about 30 federal agencies all came out with their individual implementation plans or open government plans for becoming more participatory, transparent, and collaborative than they are already, but there's a certain level there. This was a direct result of the last December's Open Government Directive, which got much more specific as far as what direction and how to get things rolling, so to speak, in in creating the type of at least executive branch of government that's more, like I said, more open and participatory and so forth and so on. Is there any big picture, anything you've seen from your perspective, of course, at the White House about how things have gone since then? I've read the press releases, but maybe we'll put something a little bit with, can you put it maybe a little less press release talk, more more relatable?
I hope so. I mean, you know, I would be so lucky if I were as so succinct as to talk in press release speak. It would be I would really be saving words per inch in that case. But you know, last week was, or 2 weeks ago, was a very exciting milestone for us. Because, you know, the Open Government Initiative and the idea of bringing more openness and innovation to the way that government works, you know, is really something that has to be embraced by and is being embraced, I think, across the executive branch of government with, you know, varying degrees of success so far and varying degrees of kind of experience and varying degrees of willingness. But the importance of having every agency, every cabinet department actually come up with its own government, open government plan, and begin to, as a result, embed the values of open government into the way that it works, and, you know, come up with its own definition of what it means for itself to be more participatory, to be more transparent in the way that it works, to think about what flagship initiatives it can actually create, I think is incredibly important, because we can have all the policies that we want and all the pronouncements about the values of engagement and openness, but unless we actually have the real practices on the ground of people doing it, and unless we're actually doing things to encourage and, you know, foster and sort of celebrate the innovation that people are doing at the staff level across the government, we really will not be able to create a more open and innovative government. So it's a really exciting, I think, first milestone. You know, we may have had a White House Open Government Initiative since the day the president took office, but I really regard April 7th almost as the first day of this, because it's the day that the agencies have taken the lead and gone forward with coming up with their own strategic plans for how to be more innovative in the way that they work. So it's a pretty, I think, exciting period. And now, you know, as we go forward from here, it's going to be about evaluating and looking at what's in those plans, trying to learn from one another about some of the best practices. In other words, there's going to be one agency that's been really, really forward-leaning and thinking in terms of its efforts at putting its, identifying and inventorying its data and putting it up online. And there'll be another agency, I think, that has been particularly successful at developing or designing a citizen engagement program. And, you know, the opportunity now to learn from one another about what works, what hasn't worked, and to continue that conversation, including through such things like the workshops that you and Lucas and others have been running to get people, again, to exchange and share ideas, I think is where the rubber really meets the road now and kind of moving this forward. So that's an important, it's a really, I think, historic occasion, but it's a really kind of first milestone for us in this project in many ways.
Mm-hmm. And I guess you could even compare it to when you say that things on April 7th really started to get rolling with the release of the plans. I was thinking of when I taught my daughters how to drive and actually putting it into gear, stepping on the gas, and luckily I didn't have to teach them how to drive a manual transmission. But I have taught other people how to drive a manual transmission, and if you don't do it just right, then you can herky-jerk and then the car stalls.
Exactly, but you have to have that herky-jerky experience, if you will. You know, you do have to try, for example, you know, learning how to do citizen engagement, and I say learning as I think the operative word. It's one thing in principle to say we're supportive of a citizen-centric, participatory and collaborative government that engages with people. It's another thing to say, well, I, you know a good tool by which I could actually ask for people's ideas or do brainstorming, for example, to get good ideas for open government plans. But it's another thing to really understand for oneself within the context of each agency how I get the word out and let people know that there is an opportunity to participate, how I ask and frame questions to therefore invite, you know, relevant, targeted, useful responses to those questions, how I figure out how, once I get good ideas from the public, how I disseminate it to the people who are doing the relevant work or making the decisions within different parts of my agency, how I provide feedback and, you know, turn it really into a conversation. So that's a lived and learned experience, I think, that we are just at the beginning of, to a large extent, that, you know, the work that we're able to do, which is what makes this a particularly exciting time, and also, you know, the beginning, I think, of an important evolutionary process.
Mm-hmm. Well, part of, and having worked in Washington myself, for I worked at five different federal agencies, and over the course of 25 years, and at different levels, headquarters level and the regional level, you know, so I've seen things that start at the top and then come out at the other end of the pipe, so to speak, at the bottom, and it's just like sometimes it's akin to the game of telephone, where you start off one person saying one thing and then it goes around the table and comes out at the end a totally different message, and it's very similar to that if it's not done right, and so there is, I have some trepidation that the best of intentions might lose or could lose something on the way as it makes its way down through from rhetoric to from policy, that is, to practice. And so that's my, as a former, like I think you might, recovering bureaucrat, I no longer want to let people know that I no longer work for the government or I'm not selling any books or whatever. So I'm kind of an entrepreneur, I guess, in that sense. But now I can say things, I guess, that I wouldn't feel comfortable saying if I was still, I wouldn't be having the show if I was still working for the government, at least without.
Well, permission. Maybe not a few years ago, but the hope is that maybe now, in a new era of open government that is trying to reward and celebrate these kinds of innovations, that, you know, you would be potentially having this radio show and spurring this conversation and using this as a wonderful way to talk to stakeholders. And get people engaged on a particular theme. And I think you're absolutely right that it was one of the sort of conscious decisions. You know, this is a topic, an issue that's very close to the president's heart, that he feels very strongly about, bringing reform to government, you know, bringing openness to government as a way to spur accountability, bring greater participation, taking advantage of new tools, as well as traditional techniques and face-to-face techniques of really engaging with people, in order to, you know, try to erode the very significant divide that people feel between themselves and their government. So this is, you know, this is something very, you know, near and dear to his heart. But at the same time, if we only had high-level pronouncements, we would not be any closer to having, you know, achieved the goal or be on the pathway to achieving the goal. It's really by doing the work, doing the projects that bring innovation to the way that we work, I think that are tremendously exciting. It's why we set up, and we have, you know, updated it once, but need to update it again, which we hope to do soon, an Open Government Innovations Gallery to sort of showcase some of the best projects taking place around government. And I want to commend it to anybody who's listening to please let us know if there are projects taking place that we should be featuring on that gallery. We will be doing another call for projects to showcase on the gallery, and you can find that at whitehouse.gov/open to click on Innovations Gallery in an attempt to really showcase some of the, you know, those actually work that's being done in action to make some of these principles real in practice.
And I certainly would be flattered if agencies, for instance, decided to have their own agency-specific open government radio show. And they can say, because the idea that, well, they can see that, for instance, I mean, that's, and there's a couple things here on leadership, and I think it's very important that, and there's a saying I learned when I was in Washington, is that you don't get out in front of your leader, of your boss, or of your leadership. And that means let them go first, and then when they see that it's okay to do something, then people will do that. So by you coming on the show, for instance, right now, then it will be easier for, say, someone who's involved at the HHS open government thing. I've approached them and so forth, but now I can say, well, Beth Novak came on the show, so it's safe for you to come on the show. So
that depends,
then,
Stephen, on how the hour ends up. You know, if people throw virtual tomatoes, then it may
not
be safe at all. But I think it's exactly to be part of that conversation, you know, that's extremely, you know, if we're going to talk about doing participation and doing collaboration, then we really have to do it. And, you know, the White House, I think, has been really at the forefront of
practicing what it preaches in the sense of, you know, putting up the White House waves records online so we can see who comes and goes from the White House. You know, actually posting financial information like staff salaries within the White House and putting that up online. You know, really being, when we talk about being transparent, that we're doing transparency ourselves in the same way. You know, coming in and having an open government initiative where we actually, you know, created a brainstorming site and a blog with comments and a wiki. And granted, many people came back and said the wiki was hard to use, et cetera, and absolutely fair points that it wasn't necessarily the best, you know, design of the tools. But we deliberately wanted to be experimental, to say we can do something quickly, we can do something at no cost, and then, you know, let someone else again, you know, sort of build on that experience, innovate on it, improve upon the tools, improve upon the practice, but to really be at the forefront of really trying to model out some of the change that we're talking about as a way to create more comfort, as you sort of allude to, for other people to adopt similar innovations and similar practices. But the practice really is reciprocal. It's not by any means coming exclusively from the White House and going out to the agencies. It's coming back in the other direction as well, where we're seeing so many exciting projects taking place across the executive branch, some of which you'll see on that White House Innovations Gallery, which you'll see talked about in the open government plans. I mean, you know, the plans are very, very different. Some are short, some are long, some are, as I alluded to before, stronger on one issue and weaker on others. But I think what's most exciting, what I'm going to be spending my time on in the coming weeks, is really trying to map and understand the range of work that's being talked about in these plans, because there is just so much exciting stuff, I think, that's in there, that really it's innovation coming out from the agencies of the executive branch that we can, as the White House, we won't be leading, but what we'll be doing is helping to celebrate and curate and talk about and shine a light on some of this amazing work that's going on and that's described in these open government plans.
Mm-hmm. And certainly for those who are lucky enough within the federal government to be able to innovate, lucky enough to have somebody, a patron or, you know, their boss or their boss's boss or somebody who says it's okay, you have my permission to experiment and so forth, and that's fine. But having, you know, like I said, having worked around for a while, that those bosses are few and far between, and so the vast, vast majority of people who are interested in open government, even those who are interested in open government, I think within the federal agencies, who want to try something, look at their boss or their boss's boss and realize that it might not be a good, as a former boss of mine said, whenever he was faced with options, he would say, which one of these would be the best career move and which one would be the worst career move? And the worst career move was usually the one that was involved experimentation. So if there's a way to, I think, to make the system safer, perhaps, you know, it might even involve some form of anonymity to be able to throw out ideas without the boss knowing that it's you that said that. That's my pet thing, is if you can somehow make immunize people from the existing carrots, I mean the existing sticks, not the carrots. I think no amount of carrots will make people respond to the carrots if there's still a big stick hanging over their head. So that's just my perspective as a former federal employee. But unless there's something else you want to bring up, we can start scrolling through some of these comments and questions.
Well, let me just raise one thing in response to that,
okay.
Which I think is a very well-taken point, because if we talk about what are some of the impediments to creating an open and innovative government, I mean, this is surely one of them, is a culture that has not rewarded experimentation or innovation in the past. And, you know, as well as other impediments, you know, that we've all seen, like a lack of available tools and sometimes lack of budgets to do things that we'd like to, although, you know, I'd make the case that a lot of what we're talking about is work that actually saves money, not that costs money. But, you know, there has been a lot of interest in and experimentation with how do you unleash good ideas from the government workforce, not just citizen participation from, you know, outside of the government, inside of the bureaucracy. And that's where agencies, for example, and they talk about this in their open government plan, like the Veterans Administration, have been really forward thinking in creating, for example, an innovation initiative to tap the good ideas of people within the Veterans Benefits Administration to figure out how do we reduce the backlog on veterans benefits claims. Or they've now replicated the process within the VHA, not just the VBA, to get ideas around the healthcare delivery system. And now they'll be doing this also with the private sector, not only with government employees, but the biggest part of developing that program, that sort of ideation program, as these things are sometimes called, it's a fancy word of what I like to just think of as brainstorming, was not the choice of tool by which to get the suggestions. It was really the design of the process and exactly thinking through these questions of things like, is anonymity actually going to help us get better ideas, or is it going to reduce civility in the process? How do we ensure that we're, you know, reading the ideas that people are sending us? How do we actually ensure that the ideas are being channeled to the right place? And so what's happened as a result of interest in doing more of this kind of employee brainstorming is there has become an informal a working group that's convened itself almost, that our office started, but now that meets on its own accord, called the Ideation Community of Practice. And last time I attended, there were about 30 agencies represented in that Ideation Community of Practice of people exactly talking through these issues of how do we design these programs to tap these good ideas, again, thinking about where we need to have anonymity, where we need to have accountability so that we can also, you know, give prizes and rewards and free T-shirts and carrots, as you put it, to people who are coming up with good ideas. And I think this is exactly some of the people are very interested in and concerned with this question, because if we don't think about how to do this effectively, we won't be able to tap these good ideas from government employees, and they'll end up going off outside of government and starting radio shows.
Right. Okay. Well, that's very good to hear. I'm glad to hear about the Ideation
Community of Practice. Terrible name for a very, very worthwhile and good program.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's great. Great to hear that this is being talked about. Hopefully, at some point, they'll come out with something that they can throw out to and say, "Hey, this is where we're thinking. You know, this is how we think we can make ideation better. And what do you people out there think about it?" And so
right.
Forth.
We should get. We'll talk about. How to get these folks on the radio as well. The good part is that the group is focused not on producing a report, but really on, you know, doing projects in practice and learning from one another's experience. So it's something only been going on for a short time, but I'm sure that we'll hear more about it in the coming weeks and months ahead.
Okay, well, good to hear that. There is actually one link here on the blog post under links for the following the discussion. I did put something there. Number 6 talks about a test of leadership where Brian Friel, who's been writing on these matters, even going back to Reinventing Government days, but he writes about the Veterans Administration's program, but he's concerned, I guess, that what happened to the, what was the feedback to the 98 or 99% of people who provided ideas, and they just took the top 10 out of, I don't know, 2,000 ideas. And so, but, you know, because if you don't tell people what happened to their idea, they might not come back the next time. Mm-hmm. You go, well, you know, just went into a black hole type of thing. So I'm glad to hear that the ideation is probably talking, they're probably looking at feedback like that from people like Brian who are raising that. So I'm glad, it's wonderful to hear.
Great.
I thought we might look at the questions if you want to.
Read them.
I'll let you pick one and I'll pick one, and hopefully we can get to them before,
okay.
And then we'll take some calls.
And should we remind people where they need to go? It's, tell us again the URL.
Right. This is, and you're listening to Open Government Radio, and I'm Steve Buckley, your host, with Beth Novick from the Office of Science and Technology Policy at the White House, head of the, Open Government Initiative at the White House. And we are looking at ustransparency.com, the blog post for April 19th. This is the show on April 20th. And if you scroll down and you're looking at ustransparency.com, there's a green box at the very end of the post for April 19th. It says comments. If you click on that, then you'll see the 13 comments, at least that I have here. There may have been some since we started the show even. But There's. Do you see what I'm?
I do.
At?
I
okay.
see the comments. The 13 comments on the posting,
mm-hmm.
and
the
I'll refresh occasionally
okay.
in case there's anyone wants to post anything else now. In response, or if you're live online and want to add any questions as we go along. So I'm scrolling through them, and let me just see if I can respond to in no particular order. I will just so there's one question that I think is a good kind of backgrounder question. So Matt Leininger, I had the pleasure to see last week at a meeting of the Brookings Institution, really asked about the relationship between the different actors involved in the White House Open Government Initiative. So let me just take that one real quick,
sure, that would be,
because
yeah,
I think that's a good backgrounder, right. is what does this whole White House Open Government Initiative actually mean? What are we actually talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And again, let me emphasize that, you know, open government is something that isn't owned by any one office within the White House or otherwise. It's really an effort that we all work on together to try to bring change to the way that we work in order to achieve our core aims and mission. And that may sound like a press release, Stephen, but I really do, you know, firmly believe that this has to be about each agency defining its own mission and goals, its own impediments to achieving those that mission and goals, and looking at how to bring innovation and sometimes technology, and innovation is not always about technology, it's more often than not, I think, about process. And imagination to the way that it works in order to achieve whatever those core goals are. But in order to provide some leadership around the policy issues that we work on, we have an effort that is a collaboration among OSTP, the Office of Science and Technology Policy, the White House Counsel's Office, the Office of Public Engagement, which he mentions in his question.
Oh, yeah, maybe we should just rattle off. Let me read the question so that people...
Oh, I'm sorry if people are not
okay.
not reading the question. I can. He's really asking about what is the White House Open Government Initiative and what's the collaboration, you know, what are the different entities that are involved, and particularly what's the relationship between this Office of Public Engagement and then other parts of the White House Open Government Initiative and how they actually work. So this notion of, you know, if we have an Office of Public Engagement, how does that relate to the notion under the Open Government Directive that we're trying to improve public engagement across the government as a whole? You're right, we should have just read his question, which would have been shorter than my version of the question. But essentially, we have a collaboration among these different offices, public engagement, White House Communications, White House Counsel's Office, OSTP, the Office of Management and Budget, because we have to all work together, otherwise this doesn't work. You know, there are components to all of this that's involved in the work that we do. The General Services Administration has also been a very active, important partner in this effort because there is a Citizen Services Office within the General Services Administration that, too, has responsibility and does work on developing tools for public engagement, for example, whereas the Office of Public Engagement is really responsible for public engagement within the White House complex itself. That's about people who are coming to the White House, about doing outreach on behalf of the President to different constituency groups. And so the Office of Public Engagement, in turn, has a network of public engagement officials all around all the agencies. So there is an ongoing conversation among the people who do public engagement in the agencies with the White House Office of Public Engagement, just as there is a community among the communications officers from the White House and the agency communications offices, just as the White House Counsel's Office, again, convenes with lawyers and White House general counsels, FOIA experts also around the executive branch. So these are really what we're doing is kind of taking a cross-cut and a collaboration across these different vertical communities to bring together horizontally, if you will, these different communities in dialogue, so technology, legal, public participation, and all be part of a conversation that look at, again, how do we create more engagement and participation. Someone asks the question here, I don't have to scroll up to see where it was, but essentially asks the question about, you know, participation that is non-technological. Maybe you can find that question or remember who asked that. I saw it here somewhere. But essentially there was this question, you know, that sort of, I think, got at the issue of public participation that wasn't simply technological. And I think, you know, that's, again, the important reason why we have public engagement, Office of Public Engagement involved, and the CTO's office involved, is so that we're looking at different aspects of how we actually do collaboration and participation. Now, here's the question. John Spady asks, what is your opinion of the current state of the physical processes and technology available today to engage all Americans who wish to participate in a face-to-face and or online dialogue about critical national issues? Can we literally engage millions of people in the process even if we wanted to? We do this for voting, but how about at an earlier stage for decentralized national engagement? Has the administration given serious thought to the creation of a nascent national dialogue infrastructure being established during the president's first term or hopefully in his second? So hear, hear to the second term, of course. And this is from John Spady, Countywide Community Forums of Kings County in Washington State. So first, you know, I think that what I'm hearing as the behind the, you know, between the lines of the question is that we don't yet have the experience or the tools for doing the kind of national level dialogues. There have been many experiments and useful work that's been done by groups all around the country from people, some of whom are represented on the questions that are asked today. I noticed that there are people like Matt Leininger, there are people like John Kamenetsky on this list, Sandy Heyerbacher, names I recognize as people who have worked in the space of trying to create both local, regional, and national level dialogues. And there have been people also who have been working on developing tools that help to engage people at a mass level, if you will. There have been some experiments both in other countries at the state level, at the regional level, at the national level, and here with doing deliberation, with doing online deliberation. But I would say, and I think that people in the community would agree, that we don't have nearly enough experience yet with how to do effective national engagements and dialogues, both online and offline. We had a lot of wonderful experience during the presidential transition period. People may remember the website change.gov, which we used as a way to hear from people across the country and get their input on policymaking, which we used to help organize national-level town halls and community fora, which we use to put out videos and ask questions and engage in brainstorming exercises with folks to hear from people to get their input, either as questions that people were asking of us or to create the Citizens Briefing Book, where we were asking questions of the American public to help give us advice about what we should do in the first 100 days in office. But I think everyone would agree that we have a lot more experience that we need to get, particularly as new technology has evolved considerably just in the last few years, new social and visual technologies that can help us learn how to engage millions of people in a large process, or perhaps even more interestingly, create a million different forms of engagement, a million different smaller versions of allow people to participate according to their highest and best use. So, you know, I liken this sometimes to the Publisher's Clearinghouse sweepstakes in the sense that there is a magazine for every different interest that's out there. It's what always amazes me. You open these sweepstakes entries and you see there is Golf Digest and Golf Weekly and Cooking Today and just making up the titles. But there's people have so many different interests. And the same is true for policy and politics. You know, you may be interested in healthcare, and I may be interested in transportation. The next person is interested in science policy, and another person is interested in, education. And so what we really have to do is to try to proliferate as many opportunities to engage as possible. I think this is not to say we don't also need to be looking at, national-level discussions that really engage a wide swath of Americans in a large-scale conversation. It's important to have those kinds of public dialogues. But I think just as we're seeing lots of proliferation of people's interests in social networks across the technological and social sphere today, similarly, we have to just get into the practice of doing lots and lots of public engagement, whatever the issue is, where some of those issues are going to really rise to the top in terms of national prominence and importance and general interest to people because they're a common topic of concern to so many people. So I think that absolutely, yes, we are looking at what the tools are and what the processes are. We want to hear from people with their ideas and proposals for how to do that. Let me point out to folks that we put in our OSTP, Open Government Plan, we have a small initiative that we sort of fondly nicknamed Bullet Point Boot Camp, which essentially is nothing more than giving some pointers on if you want to give us a proposal, here's the way we want to hear from you. And it might seem fairly simple and straightforward, but I can tell you that from practical experience, it merits repeating, which is to say, you know, send us 2 pages. You send us 2 pages about anything, we would be happy to read it and to think about it and to, you know, have a conversation about whether that proposal is something that can be implemented. Send us 67 pages, it will decrease the likelihood that we actually will have the time to read it in the first instance, as good as it may be. You know, start with the 2 pages and send the 65 to follow. So again, it seems like a simplistic point. But we wanted to actually be a little bit more explicit about how we solicit ideas for proposals, so that, and this is one of those instances where we would really love to hear from you and know what are the good ways that we can think about engaging millions of people. Where have other people seen this done successfully? Where have we not seen it done successfully, and therefore can learn from those experiences to do it better and to think about how to, you know, now in this new technological era, potentially create these initiatives going forward.
Okay, well,
you pick a question.
I want to make sure that I give you enough time. We have enough time left to take some calls, and you need to leave.
I'm going to be able to take it. I need just a couple of minutes before 3 is fine.
A few minutes before 3. Okay,
yeah.
Then that's good. That's better than 10 minutes before 3. Okay, fine. I would like to, you know, as you were talking about, since we were before, I did want to ask one thing about the Office of Public Engagement, because they are the part that arranges the president's outreach efforts, meaning things like what are referred to as town hall meetings. And I know there are some people, in fact, there was someone told me about their op-ed piece that was in the Washington Post this past Sunday about Maryland having fake open government. And so I know there's a concern that a lot of this is just for show. And I can say that personally, when I see the president go someplace and that's billed as a town hall meeting by the White House, and it looks more like a pep rally. I come from a New England, small New England town, and that's where I am now, back in the hometown where I grew up, and we have town meetings, real town meetings,
right,
going on for centuries. So when you see town hall meetings where it looks more like a pep rally, you know, there's a concern from people like me that's like, well, maybe not so much. Is this the type of public engagement? Is there a better way to do it that's more participatory and collaborative than a rah-rah event type of thing? So they have that concern, and I think that's well.
Right, and someone does ask the question here, ask a sort of critical question about, you know, whether public engagement, you know, really is public engagement effectively. And let me, you know, reiterate that, for example, whether a rally is designed to do something very different, people who come to those, of course, are there out of enthusiasm and, you know, because they want to be there, because they want to be part of the crowd, and the wave of interested, engaged people who care about an issue, who want to be there to support their president out of patriotism, out of interest in the topic, whatever the reason is, or just a chance to be part of, you know, if it's taking place in their town, who doesn't want to be there for a happening? Same reason we all go to parades on national holidays, et cetera, because we really want to be part of the community and part of potentially a celebratory event, or to make our voices heard by the sheer kind of physical mass of our presence. I mean, there's nothing really that substitutes for the crowd in that sense. So I think there's, you know, benefit to be had from the rally. There's a benefit to be had that's very different from a town hall meeting where people are actually asking questions and they really are being listened to. You know, when we do this, whether it's face-to-face or whether it's online, where we've now done some online Q&A with the president that enable more people to really submit questions and ask questions. And granted, it's a fraction of the number of people who are participating and writing in, because, you know, we live in a big and complex and diverse democracy, but, you know, just as now, we probably won't get to all the questions that people have asked, but, you know, this is a really genuine conversation that people are part of. They're happening. Let me give you another example, though. It's not always a conversation that has to happen directly with the president or with the White House. A few weeks ago, the Office of Science and Technology published a request for information in connection with the president's grand challenges on innovation. It asked questions like, what should be the next scientific grand challenge that we should be investing in, as we did in the space race a generation ago? What are the really hard scientific questions that we should be asking ourselves that will help to promote innovation in this country? We put out a request for information. In turn, The American Association for the Advancement of Science, their expert labs program, said, we've heard the call, the request for information. We're now going to do our own project to actually create a conversation to get answers to this question. And then we will, the American Association, deliver those responses after we filtered them and looked at them. We will deliver them in turn in response to the request for information. So it's not always that conversation has to happen directly. It can happen mediated by interest groups, civil liberties groups, deliberation and dialogue practitioners, radio shows that are helping, again, to, you know, engender a public conversation about issues that we care about. I remember this topic coming up in the transition when a number of comments had come in on issues of scientific priority. And there was a particular suggestion that someone had made in regard to the space program, and the question came up of, oh, well, that question wasn't answered by the president in the video or by the policymakers who were doing the video responses to those questions. Well, what happened was a reporter picked up the question and then wrote about it, and that led to people talking about it on blogs and then the creation of a conversation around a particular topic, which became then part of the public dialogue and the national public dialogue. So it's very interesting how these things kind of filter through the system, and we have to think about in a distributed communications environment of Facebook and YouTube and Twitter, the new ways that we think about having conversations that don't always have to be directly, you know, with a government official, but that can be with one another to take action in our own communities and to really solve problems in new ways that may or may not involve government so directly, but that may use the convening power of government to help have some of those conversations. So all that to say, I think the critical comments are very useful because we do need to push ourselves on what it means to actually do public engagement in new ways. We're, you know, at the beginning of that process. And we need to hear from people about successful experiences and experiments that they've had that we can really learn from, whether to do in the White House, to do at the agency level. But, you know, we're really at the beginning of this process. So it's another reason we need people to engage around the open government plans and to come back and say, hey, you know, here's a better way for you to do engagement. You want to do citizen participation, here's a better way for you to do it, and to help provide those ideas because I think there's a hunger now to have them. And don't assume at all that where you're not seeing it, that it's out of some lack of desire to do it. It's often just a lack of knowledge or know-how, and where we need to hear from people who engage on these issues. So, sorry, Stephen, that was a long-winded answer. Let me, I'll make the next one short, I promise.
Okay, well, we'll go to some questions here before we run out of time. And I will say to people that certainly I'm not going to answer all the questions in one radio show, and I would, like I said, hope that I could get you to come back on some other time down the road when things have become more interesting, and there'll be even more we can't talk about in the time allowed. But another way for people who are listening to stay up, of course, is to they can provide comments here. But I find a better way is an email group that I also moderate that was set up by OpenTheGovernment.org. But the link there. It's right on that. It's I think it's the last link at ustransparency.com. At the list of 15 links there, there's a link to the Google group. So it's an opt-in, opt-out, moderated email group, which means not a lot of traffic, but I expect traffic to be picking up with all that's going on. But I make sure that it tries to stay on topic, and I think a well-moderated email group can really focus a lot better than a ton of Twitters, but Twitter has its place, so I'm not being trashing on Twitter. So anyway, well, let's see if I do recognize one of these numbers as coming from, I happen to know because I used to work there, an agency that, so it's coming from an agency, and if the person is just listening and just want, you know, that's fine, just don't respond. I'm taking you off of mute, and if you have a question for Beth Novak, then go ahead, but otherwise I'll just assume you just want to listen. And so let's see, is there somebody, let's see, okay, fine. Is there someone there who wants to ask Beth a question? I'm guessing that I'll take that as a no, and you can just continue listening. Unless, second chance, okay, I'm going to, so another phone number, maybe perhaps somebody a little reticent, like I said, at questioning higher-ups, and we'll go Here's another caller. Is there a question for you'd like to ask Beth Novak? Is there a caller there who would like to? And hello.
Can I ask a question?
Sure. You don't have to identify yourself, but it would be nice if you could. But go ahead.
Okay. My name is Bruce Gross, and I am a contractor. But as I understand it, the plans are going to be evaluated by May 1st by OMB and scored, and the results will be made public, and the scoring will be put on the open dashboard. Is that correct?
So the collaborative effort that is the White House Open Government Initiative that includes OMB, White House Counsel, OSTP, et cetera, will be evaluating the plans, that's right, and we'll be working with the agencies on a process of assessment and self-assessment of the plans that we will then report on the Open Government dashboard at whitehouse.gov/open, yes, because the goal here is not only to create the plans but to hold ourselves accountable for making sure that those plans actually track to the requirements of the Open Government Directive and that they are really doing the job of, we're doing the job of pushing ourselves forward to the next level of creating more transparency, you know, identifying participation opportunities, creating flagship initiatives, and we want to be sure that the plans have done are not just plans that have a cover that says Open Government Plan, but that they have substance between the two covers of the plan. So yes, there's a public engagement process, and we'll be putting up something soon to really describe in more detail as we talk with the agencies about that evaluation process.
I had read, I thought that you might be doing that by May 1st. Is that a slip?
No. The timeline, I don't have a calendar in front of me to know if that's the weekday, but it will be
Saturday.
That's a Saturday, so that's what it sounds like. But it will be in that time frame, more or less, that we'll have an initial evaluation of the plans done. That's right.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
And let me just say that again. There are we are all of the agencies where they've posted plans have posted some means of public feedback. That's most often an email address. But I want to really encourage people to please adopt a plan, give feedback, let us hear from you, and you know I'm very also happy to hear from you about specific plans, but it's really important to make sure that the agencies hear from you with your ideas for how to make the plans better going forward.
And I guess there actually was a comment to that effect made. I'm not sure if it's under anonymous, so as on U.S. transparency. The blog post that one of the comments did touch on that. So I had been thinking ahead about that because myself, I'm trying to understand if OMB is now looking and evaluating the plans and coming out with their assessment on May 1st, did they look at it before they were released? Because that to me is kind of like, well, didn't you just look at these? So I'm trying to understand bureaucratically how the person who vetted it before it was released is now looking at it afterwards and saying, oh, "Well, this, what a surprise! This is great."
Well,
you understand what I'm saying?
I think I do, but it's a lot less sort of bureaucratic. Let me just say than I think you're making out to be. In other words,
okay,
this has been an ongoing dialogue, among us. Where, for example, you know, I have read personally not only the plans but multiple drafts of almost all of the plans. In many cases, you know, where possible in terms of timing and to read, you know, several more than one draft. Because the goal is again not to sort of simply have a check the box exercise of saying we did an open government plan, but you know the agency has been wonderful about saying here's a draft of our plan. Give us ideas for how we can improve it. We not only had a process where people from our team, and again that's the collective OMB, White House Counsel, OSTP, et cetera, team. So it's multiple eyeballs on the task, but where we also had a day of office hours, if you will, where groups came in, interest groups came in. who were invited via the Open Government Listserv, for which people are welcome to sign up, and came in, and basically the agencies kind of did little rapid presentations, sort of like a VC pitch, and said, here's what we're thinking about putting in the plan. And groups said, hey, this is what's missing. Here's more of what you should do. Here's some ideas for how to improve it. So there was definitely, and in some cases, agencies put up, and this will be, Stephen, surprise you, is very unbureaucratic, put up first drafts of their plans, took feedback, and then rewrote the plans. So there's been a lot of dialogue that's gone into the process. But now, you know, we would, you know, be disingenuous if we did not actually have a process of evaluating the plans and holding ourselves accountable. So where we said, you know, we will create greater government transparency and we will do greater citizen, citizen participation in government, where we are not doing that, we are going to hold the agencies accountable. And we're going to shine a light on the people both who are doing a great job and who deserve to be celebrated and, you know, their praises sung to the rooftops, as well as those people who, you know, did this as a box-checking exercise or who maybe did a plan that's strong in one area but weak in another, and that weak area has to really be called out so that we are improving the process. Because, again, the goal is not simply to have filled out a document or done a form or written a, you know, a proposal. And that's why these open government plans were not, you'll see they're not styled as here's a form you have to fill out and send to OMB. This is a report you have to deliver to the American people and on which you're going to be held accountable. And so we're part of that process of ensuring that we hold ourselves and one another accountable. As part of that process, as you've also read on the website, and that May 1st date is, I believe that Anish had put in his posting about this, and so it is, you know, May 1st or thereabouts. Again, the Saturday date may, you know, mean it's the day before or the day after, but that we also have a process whereby the agencies are have set for themselves the, you know, sort of defining for themselves, saying this is what it really would mean to go above and beyond the call, to be really at the forefront of, you know, creating the best possible plans, and are going to be evaluating themselves and one another. So this is, again, not a box-checking, form-filling exercise, but really about doing and redoing and pushing ourselves forward until these plans become as good as they can possibly be at this point in time, and that we then continue to learn and grow and develop, and that we do these plans then again at the next deadline and have, you know, improved upon where we were and can look back and say, we have come a long way, baby, between, you know, version one and then the new plans that will be drafted in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, so that's certainly very interesting, and I know you need to go off to a meeting in a minute. The discussion, I think, about now that the plans are out, about how to evaluate them, I guess I'm concerned that one group will come up with one yardstick and another group will come up with another yardstick, and everybody, there'll be all these different yardsticks, and even though we're basically measuring the same things at different agencies and so forth. So that's my concern. So I look forward. I'm glad that seems to be the next area.
Well, ultimately, our yardstick has to be what the language and what's in the directive itself, as to whether, you know, one person will value one thing more than another. Some people may be more interested in the transparency parts or more interested in the participation parts, but we do have, you know, a measurable yardstick in terms of language that has been out there that's been published, so we won't be sort of making it up. The criteria won't be something new. There won't be some surprise of something that the public and that the agencies haven't seen before. It'll be measuring ourselves against the recipe that we've already set ourselves in the Open Government Directive.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Well, yeah, I guess I'm just concerned that outside groups will come up with their report cards as they like to do and so forth and so on, and basically it'll just be, okay, 90 seconds, the lady is telling me.
Okay, well,
I know you need to run off to your 3 o'clock.
I'm going to run, but I want to thank you very much for having me, and I want to thank the people who posed the questions. I hope that I got to some, if not most of them, at least implicitly, and be very happy to continue the conversation then and try to get some feedback, and we can do that via the listserv, as well as to make sure that we cover some of this in future conversations to come, and we'll try to answer the questions then going forward.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you, Beth. I hope, yes, we'll come back again sometime, and I hope some people now out there in the bureaucracy feel more comfortable about coming on the show. In the
absolutely,
meantime.
And you know, we hear you, we're listening, we're reading the listserv. We are really, really grateful to you for being really one of the great champions of this effort. So I want to thank you and the community very, very much for all of your support and participation. And good, bad, indifferent, or otherwise, it's really important, and we're just so glad to have you as part of this effort.
Well, we're glad to have you as part leading the effort.
There
you
go.
Thank you very much, Beth.
Thanks much. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. And so we have 10 seconds left or something like that. Sorry we couldn't take all your calls. Like I said, go to the Google group. We'll have more. This is Steve Buckley signing off for Open Government Radio. Be sure to listen next week, where hopefully I'll have someone else from the government as our guest. Thank you very much.